Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello, and welcome. Welcome to an hour of food power. That's right. Today we're going to be talking about food, and for those of you that are regular listeners to the show, you know how I love to share recipes. I think cooking food, having delicious fragrances filling your kitchen, it just is wonderful. When you walk into a home or into a restaurant and those fabulous, fabulous aromas, like freshly baked bread, fill your sinuses. That's the only way I know how to express it. It's something comforting. Chocolate chip cookies, it's the same thing. Soups bubbling on the stove. All of this creates a magic, and there's a reason for it, because it should be good nutrition that's going into your body. It's nourishment for your soul. There is so much about food that is so vital. And my guest today, Meadow Lynn, she and Denise Lynn have put together this incredible cookbook. It's called The Mystic Cookbook, and oh, the cover is just gorgeous. But the subtitle is The Secret Alchemy of Food, and that's what we're going to be discussing. And keep your pads of paper and pens handy, because we are going to be sharing some of those scrumptious recipes with you. But you're going to be getting a little bit more than just the recipe today. Hi, Meadow. Welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you. It's such a joy to be here. I'm salivating just listening to your introduction about soup bubbling on the stove and chocolate chip cookies. I'm thinking, boy, I should have eaten breakfast. I usually wait to eat breakfast till a little later in the day so I can really enjoy it.
Well, I love food. And part of the passion that I have for food, my husband has often said to me, Donna, you should have had a restaurant. I said, are you kidding? I would have been going bonkers if I'd had a restaurant. Because it's a lot of work. I mean, running a restaurant is really, really hard work. But I think the love of food came from being around my Aunt Josefina when I was growing up. She was Italian. And the Italians really have a passion for food. And I love the fragrance of the fennel seeds and the aromas of the different foods that she would prepare. I mean, it was just a joy. You'd walk into her tenement building that she lived in. I forget how many floors she was up on in New York City. And I will never forget this wonderful smell. No matter how hard you'd worked during the day, no matter what had gone on, it was this energy that came with these fragrances of her wonderful cooking. And I think that more than the German side of the family, which I have also, there was just this magic that the Italians had with food. And I can remember going into restaurants and being aware of all these smells that were just wonderful. And of course, I've been in a few where the smells weren't so hot. But let's talk about you and the Mystic Cookbook. You have done something here, you and Denise. Now, let's give a little background on you and Denise. I'll start with Denise first. Denise has had 17 books she's already published. She has been a talk show host herself. She is the founder of the International Institute of Soul Coaching, which is quite an accomplishment. And she has just accomplished so many things. And you have gotten a number of degrees. You write a food and lifestyle column for a Seattle newspaper. The two of you, where did you get your passion for food? I mean, for the two of you to come together like this, to me it's sort of natural because of the association, but how did you find your passion for food?
You know, Donna, I think I was born with it.
Uh-huh.
I wonder how far it harkens back into my past that some of my earliest childhood memories are crawling up into the cupboards and, 3 years old, I had to use a chair because I couldn't reach the cupboards, and I'd pull out bottles and jars and boxes and mix and concoct and create my own kitchen alchemy, you know, just as a toddler. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of a family joke that my life is chronicled in the meals I've eaten, that I might not remember all of the details of a certain event or vacation, yet I could tell you specifically what I ate, that most of my memories are all connected to a scent or a flavor or a meal in some way. So it's been natural for me to kind of follow this passion. But as you said, I kind of took an academic route for many years, and I studied French and English literature in college, and then I went on to get a master's degree in French cultural studies while studying in Paris, which meant, of course, I got to do a lot of empirical research, which, you know, mm-hmm. just means eating.
And, absolutely.
And then for half of my lifetime, for the past 18 years, I've spent my summers cooking for the retreats my mom leads. She leads soul coaching workshops, as you mentioned. She founded the International Institute of Soul Coaching. And I've cooked for the guests at our ranch here in California. And through that, we started to notice that in the workshops, people were having deep inner shifts, not just from the inner work that they were doing in the course, but because we made mealtimes a celebration, just as you were talking about your there was your grandmother, right?
Your My aunt
grandmother, your, the, you know, but just, you know, making it a celebration of community and breaking bread with others. And we'd make it fun, too. If it's a Mexican meal, we'd get out piñatas and maybe decorate the, you know, instead of tablecloths, maybe use a serape. And then mm-hmm. my mom even has some carved cactus and set the music to match, maybe some mariachi music. But maybe if it was a Japanese meal, it would be, you know, we have some black plates and it would be very refined and elegant. Maybe we'd listen to Zen flute music. And we kind of set the tone to match the theme of the meal. And then we spend time saying grace and honoring the plants and the animals and the farmers who've all come together, the wind and the rain and the land, you know, everything that has gone into creating that meal. And we started to notice not only how much fun it was, but that love and that joy and that sense of community had really, it rippled out and had lasting effects. And so my mom and I wanted to kind of share what we'd learned and blend her four-decade career in spirituality with my background and passion for cooking and eating to share with others what we've seen and noticed and how you can actually savor your life by savoring your meals.
This is something that I found your book just absolutely wonderful in respect to what you have just shared. And that is that your mom, Denise, has shared her experience, and you, in your joy of cooking food, the two of you are phenomenal. And I love what she said. You love to cook, she loves to eat, and that's a good combination.
Yeah.
And I really, you know, I don't know about you, but I learned a long time ago that if you sat down at a table filled with the most beautiful food you could ever imagine, and there wasn't a sense of joy or fellowship with the people that were there, it didn't taste good. And I noticed the difference in cooks years ago, and this is just something that I did with observation. You could have three people working with making bread, for example.
Mm-hmm.
Every single batch of bread was different. Every single batch of bread had a relationship to the people that were making it. Now, someone may say to me, Donna, you're nuttier than a fruitcake. Well, let me tell you, I'm not. I have noticed how a person's energy, if someone is preparing a dough and they are in a good mood and there's this wonderful sense of joy in preparing it, that bread is utterly delicious, even though it's just made with flour, water, yeast, salt, a little bit of sugar. Seemingly inert ingredients. You go to someone else, they say, oh, my goodness, I hate this. I've had a lousy day. I had a fight with my dog, my boyfriend. I just have a miserable day, and they wonder why their bread doesn't turn out. It's an amazing thing to see. Let's talk about the vital energy of food.
Well, you know, it's so interesting what you're saying, and I think especially with bread, it would make sense because it is such, it's a living organism, bread. That's why I love making it, because it is alive, and every time mm-hmm. it's different. But what we talk about in the book is that idea of energy and vibration being inherent in our food, that, you know, Einstein said that the way that we perceive matter is actually wrong. He said everything that we see as matter is actually energy and vibration. So it makes sense that our food picks that up. I like using the metaphor of a snowball. You know, when you're making a snowman with wet snow, and of course in Seattle when you get snow, it's wet, you know, and it really like it rolls really well and it picks up a lot of snow. And you end up with this really big snowball that can be the base of your snowman. It's the same with food and energy, from that seed that's planted to the time that you know, becomes a fruit and ends up on your plate, that it's been picking up energy and vibration from the soil, from the sun. You know, in France they talk about terroir, the idea that, you know, a Bordeaux grape grown in the Bordeaux isn't the type of grape, but a grape from the Bordeaux region, Merlot, Cabernet, mm-hmm. grown in the Bordeaux region will not be like that same variety of grape grown in California or Chile, that the land, the history, the air, the people, the soil, the minerals, you know, everything goes to create the unique quality of that grape or potato or whatever the food is that's being grown. And it's picking up that energy, and it's the same, you know, and the people, each person who comes in contact, and as you said, can make a big difference. And, you know, it's fascinating. You're probably familiar with Dr. Emoto's work with in Japan with frozen water and the crystals. They're doing similar research in Stuttgart, Germany, at one of the universities there, where they're showing this is what I've seen when you're talking about the bread, that they give a number of, I don't know, study participants vials of identical tap water. And then they have the person hold that tap water, and then they freeze it and look at the crystals, just as Dr. Emoto has done in Japan. And the remarkable thing is each vial has crystals that connect to the person who held that water. And they do it over and over again, and each person's crystals look the same every time. Mm-hmm. And it's remarkable to show that, you know, on one hand, too, part of me thinks, this is nuts. You know, how can that mm-hmm. be? But there's something to it. It's just how, I'm getting tongue-tied, how we wax lyrical about grandma's apple pie. You know, grandma probably makes a great apple pie, but it's that love, that joy, that, you know, maybe it's her warm embrace that we taste when we eat that pie.
Mm-hmm. It really does make a difference. It really does make a difference. And this may sound a little corny to some people listening, but I try to be consciously present whenever I'm entertaining and whenever I'm preparing food, but especially with bread. And I think this goes back to my childhood with, again, my Aunt Josefina. Because for her, whenever she'd fix food, it really was a series of dishes. I mean, my goodness, this woman would laden a table with so many dishes, it was just unbelievable. She'd start like at 4 or 5 in the morning. And by the time all the men got home, she had, I don't know how many sons, I think 5. And so they all had hearty appetites. So that's what this woman was doing, was cooking all day and preparing for the meal. That she was an at-home lady. But I just think that that was her way of expressing love. And that was something that, for her, that was an accomplishment, to be able to feed her family well with hearty, healthy foods. Now, in her practical self, I don't think she was going around saying, I want organic. That's not the way she was thinking. This was just a part of her life. This was part of her mm-hmm. upbringing. She always wanted fresh ingredients, and of course she had the markets on every corner in New York City, and by golly, that's what she did. I want to share some recipes, though, quickly. One in particular, you have a blessing oatmeal, and I think the blessing of food, and even if you say it quietly, you don't have to go through a big ceremony, but really appreciating and blessing the foods in front of you. It's something I grew up with, and it's something that I think is very viable. I think it's important. I think our body harmony, our wellness, to be able to be appreciative of what's going into it and nourishing ourselves with that appreciation. It all comes together. It is all a part of the vitality of life. You got a wonderful oatmeal recipe, which I think anybody could have any time of the day. and it's called the Blessing Oatmeal, and I wanted to share it with my listeners. 4 cups of water, 2 cups of old-fashioned rolled oats, half an apple. You want to peel it, core it, and chop it. You need 3/4 of a teaspoon of freshly grated ginger, 1/2 teaspoon of cinnamon, 1/4 teaspoon of freshly grated nutmeg, which is amazing stuff, and 1/4 teaspoon of ground cloves, a pinch of salt, and 1/4 cup of dried cranberries. Now, this serves anywhere from 4 to 6 people. It might be for one guy, you know, if he's a bodybuilder. I mean, this would just be one serving for him. But it's real simple. You just combine your water, your oats, your apple, bring it to a gentle boil, reduce the heat to low, add the spices and salt to the pot, stirring it. You want to make sure you don't burn it. Put in your dried cranberries and cook until the apples are soft, about 10 or 15 minutes. And stir it frequently and serve it with butter, chopped nuts, grated coconut, whatever you want. And you know what I was thinking is you could also use the same kind of recipe with quinoa, couldn't you?
You could, definitely, or rice or any grain that you wanted to use for a hot breakfast cereal.
But I just think that it's a way of fixing something that gives you a good amount of energy in the morning, and the flavors of the freshly grated nutmeg and, you know, it's just wonderful. It's just absolutely wonderful. Let's talk for a minute about the section that your mother put together in the book about the belief about food. I can't tell you how many times I've met people because they're on diets, or they have grown up in certain environments, that they are really fearful of food. Let's talk about the beliefs about food and what we can do to change them.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. We often, you know, we talk about, you know, there's the adage, you are what you eat. And we talk about what to eat a lot. You'll see, you know, on social media sites, there's always a new post about the new great diet or the new thing you should or shouldn't eat. And there's always a new research study on different things you should eat, or, you know, magazine article. But we often forget about how to eat and how to cook. And the more emotional, mental component and beliefs are so ingrained in us. For instance, they did a study with when they were testing chemotherapy drugs, and it was a blind study. And what's fascinating about that is, in the blind study, everybody thought that they were getting chemotherapy. 74% of those getting the actual chemotherapy lost their hair. But there were also, you know, participants getting placebo, which was a saline injection. Mm-hmm. Of those people, because they believed they were getting the chemotherapy drug, 31% lost their hair.
Amazing.
31%, and it was just salt water. And so our beliefs, you know, it's not, we often, especially in this country, I think as you mentioned, Italy and France and Spain, other more traditional cultures, they see food as a sense of community and joy and more than the sum of its parts, more than simply calories. But unfortunately, here in the U.S., often we see food as simply a means of fuel. And we've lost that connection. And so we have very strong beliefs about what is good nutrition and what is bad nutrition. And it starts to kind of, what's the word I'm looking for? But it kind of cordons off our life, you know, and we see things as black and white, and it's all about what does it contain. You know, we eat a carrot because it has beta-carotene, not simply because it's a carrot, you know, or pomegranates because they have antioxidants. But there's something about looking at the whole, and we have these very strong, many people, ingrained beliefs, whether they make sense or not. And one of the examples we use in the Mystic Cookbook is many people believe that cooking your vegetables to oblivion is, you know, really bad. But when they've done research, it's possible that, you know, the way that our grandparents overcooked vegetables, that actually they had killed more of the possible pathogens in the food. So You're losing some of the nutrition in it, but you're also protecting yourself against certain pathogens. So I give this example that, you know, it actually probably is healthier in the long run to eat fresh fruits and vegetables, not way overcooked. You know, we're not advocating cooking your vegetables to mush. But it shows that when you have one strong belief one way, there's often an opposite belief that is just as valid. Mm-hmm. And when you have negative beliefs about food, your body tends to make that true. When you have positive beliefs, your body tends to make it true. Our subconscious goes way out of its way to prove itself right. So when you believe something, it tends to be true. Mark David, he's a nutritionist, he talks about when you're happy to be eating your favorite flavor of ice cream, and you're just really, you know, you're just ecstatic, I love vanilla ice cream, that happiness and joy that you're feeling activates your hypothalamus, that gets your thyroid hormone all excited, which then gets your digestive hormones moving, and you actually digest and assimilate that ice cream much better, and you are able to absorb nutrients from it than if you're really stressed and your cortisol levels are going up, and then, you know, and then you're holding on to extra calories anyway because your body's thinking, I better hang on to these calories. I don't know when my next meal will be. And, you know, if that was two different people, one happy, one fat, or, you know, stressed, they're both eating the ice cream, but they're having a very different experience of it, both on an emotional but also on a chemical level within their body. The person who has the good beliefs, the good feelings, is going to get more from that ice cream.
Oh,
and, of course,
absolutely.
As I said, it's good to, you need to eat fresh fruits and vegetables and whole grains, but, you know, all good stuff to tell us. Also, the emotional component is equally important.
Well, I think there's so many aspects of your book that really bring an understanding that food is a joyful experience. And if we think about it, look at the holidays, look at the gatherings around the family table, look at the joy when we can share with others. I don't know of very many people that do not enjoy getting together for a party, let's say for a potluck, and if they bring something that is their favorite dish, you don't care what it is, everybody will take a taste of it, and they just ooh and ah, and maybe part of it is because they didn't have to fix it, but it's it is something that there is this joy. I have experienced it. I've done a lot of entertaining, and I just look at that, and I really know that you have to be present with your cooking, and as you mentioned earlier, presentation makes a difference. What are you doing? When you take something and you, if it's prepared with love and you put it into what I would call a broken chip bowl and you're in a very drab environment and all of this has an effect on you, it is doing the little things that can make a difference. And maybe setting down, if you're going to fix something for yourself. I know people who are single sometimes and say, I don't like eating alone. I just detest it. Yet, if you are gracious to yourself, if you set up a nice setting for yourself, even if you're alone, and you make it beautiful, and you appreciate and respect the food that's in front of you, it's going to make a tremendous shift in your body. I wanted to share your wonderful recipe that you've got in here. They're called Velvety Spice Sweet Potatoes. This is a wonderful recipe, and it's so easy, and it's made with coconut milk. Would you share that with us?
Yeah, that's one of my favorites. So delicious. I really love it at Thanksgiving. One year I did it at Thanksgiving. The person who ate it the most was my friend's 8-year-old baby. She had half of it on her face, the rest in her tongue. She could not have enough of it. It is so delicious. But it's a simple recipe. You said you boil sweet potato, and then instead of adding butter and cream, you add that layer of coconut milk. You know when you have a can and you don't shake it, there's that really like curry layer on top. And you mix it in place of vegan butter and then some fresh ginger. You're noticing a theme, fresh ginger in the oatmeal and fresh ginger in the potatoes, but in this one, actually squeeze the ginger through a garlic press. So you're just juice without the fibrous, you know, parts of the ginger, and then a little Chinese spice powder, and mix together. And they are so velvety smooth, and they are so flavorful. You know, I love mashed potatoes, but these ones are, you don't have to, you know, at Thanksgiving, you don't have to cover them in gravy to give them additional flavor. It's mm-hmm. all right there in the potato, and they are so delicious.
Okay, Meadow, I wanted to ask you a question. Your voice was cutting out a little bit. Are you near a computer while you're on the phone?
I am.
Okay. If you will, distance yourself from the computer because the computer is interfering with your telephone frequency.
Oh, that's strange. I've had that happen before, but it does happen. I have it corded so it doesn't move far.
Yeah, it's just something I noticed, and you were sort of cutting out there, so I just wanted to let you know about that.
Well, I hope this will help, and I still can't view very well here. So we are enjoying the joy of technology.
Well, one of the things that I wanted to mention, too, and again, we're talking with Meadow Lynn. Her book is The Mystic Cookbook, and it's The Secret Alchemy of Food. Her mom, Denise Lynn, has traveled a journey where she incorporates in the facility that they operate in California a lot of what we're talking about today. But you can do it yourself in your own environment. And there is a section in the book regarding cellular memory. Now, why is this important? Many times we find that there is a harmonic with ourselves and our food that we eat. And when I use the term harmonic, it is we are attracted to certain foods. And I know that because of my background, because of Italian and also German heritage, but I also have Southern, I'm a Heinz 57, for heaven's sake. And there is that component of mixture. I enjoy Korean food. I enjoy all kinds of foods. However, I have members of my family that they only like, let's say, and because of their strong Germanic background, and European background that runs in the family, they only go with certain foods. Meadow, your mom talks about cellular memory. Let's discuss that a little bit, because that is something that I think is extremely important, and I don't think people realize that many times they adopt certain patterns with food because of that cellular memory. What was your experience with that?
Yeah, well, a lot of our food choices are based on our own preferences, and some of them go back to childhood, and others can even be connected to a past life. But there are some things that are inherent in our cells, in our genes, in the way that we're made up, that go back to our heritage, to our ancestors. They did a study at Tufts University with Thai and Swedish women and iron absorption. It was fascinating. When they fed both groups of women traditional Thai food, the Swedish women, who weren't particularly fond of the hot, sweet, spicy food, they absorbed less iron from that meal than the Thai women did. And then when they reversed it, the Swedish women, who had a cultural connection, it was kind of in their cells, they absorbed much more iron from the hamburger and green beans that they were served, the more traditional Swedish food. So the way that we, as we were with that example of ice cream before, too, the way we assimilate food is not simply based on what we would find on the nutrition label. There is this amount of iron and this amount of fat and this amount of protein. That it also, as you said, has to do with our beliefs, but also our cellular memory, what is written in ourselves from our culture, from our heritage. And they've done research, too, which is really interesting, and this is a whole other topic, but with organ transplant patients. And there's one example that we use in the book. It's based on a story that's written by a woman in a book that she wrote called A Change of Heart. And she received a transplant. And after that, suddenly she'd been a vegetarian. Suddenly she was craving, I think it was chicken nuggets, mm-hmm. and beer, mm-hmm. and green peppers, none of which were things that she'd ever eaten before. But it turns out that the 18-year-old who'd been in a motorcycle accident, whose organs she ended up receiving, had deep cravings for those particular foods. And, of course, this is anecdotal, and this doesn't happen for all transfer organ transplant patients. But it shows that there is something inherent in our genes that is connected to our food proclivities.
I agree with that. And I have seen that so many times. I have seen it over and over and over again. And I think to be able to expand our cellular memory and appreciation, we need to be willing to try different things. We need to be open to it. And there are some things I'm not interested in. Calamari doesn't do a thing for me, regardless of my Italian heritage.
And you said you're Italian.
I am Italian, but forget it. I can skip that and snails. I'm sorry. There's not the French thing in there with me either. But in all seriousness, you know, we have to have fun with food. And we're not going to like everything. And there's a reason for that, because sometimes our bodies will tell us what is not good for us and what is. Your book that you and your mom put together, The Mystic Cookbook, not only is it absolutely gorgeous, I mean, the photography in it, the stories in it, the wisdom, the delicious recipes that you have in it, all of this and more. You go into the art of hospitality. There's so much here. It's just a delight to read it. It is absolutely a delight. And you have a website called themysticcookbook.com that people can go to. And I just think the two of you are just a phenomenal team, and congratulations on putting out such a phenomenal cookbook that I think belongs in everyone's kitchen or wherever it is you keep your cookbooks. And if you're a collector of cookbooks, I think this one is going to be a surprise to you. You really will enjoy it because it comes from a whole different modality that brings joy, appreciation, beauty, love, and the wonderful, wonderful, delightful experience of cooking and making it easy. Meadow Lynn, thank you so much for being my guest today.
Thank you so much, Donna. It's been such a joy.
This is Donna Sebo. Don't forget, check out Meadow and Denise Lynn, themysticcookbook.com. It is a fabulous read. We'll be back in just a moment.
Do you have children between the ages of 3 to 10? Do you love children's books and collect them? Then you'll want to know about God's Kiss, the award-winning illustrated children's book that has been enjoyed by families around the world. 15 beautiful illustrations by Pacific Northwest artist Ed Gedrose accompany this lovely story about a little boy named Johnny that will capture your heart and mind in a very special way. Multicultural and non-denominational in content, it will become a family favorite that you and your children will want to read again and again. This book is available by itself through Amazon, or if you contact me, Donna Sebo, directly, you can get a personalized signed copy. There is also a talking book. You can order the talking book CD by contacting me via email, donna@delphiinternational.com, or by calling 253-582-5604. You can also visit my website, delphiinternational.com, to see more details. God's Kiss is a family classic that belongs in everyone's library. Get your copy now.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome back. I am, in a moment, I'll give you that sweet potato recipe again. Sometimes when we have guests and they're on a portable phone, which almost all of us have, and then they get close to a computer, which she was, then there's a little bit of interference. So I will be giving that out in just a little bit. But in the meantime, hey, we've got open telephone lines. And if you would like to chat with me directly, I'd be delighted to light up your life with a little bit of insight. 888-627-6008 is the telephone number to call into. That's 888-627-6008. And, of course, all I need from you is your first name or your initial. And after that, you're welcome to ask me a question about anything that is of concern to you. Tomorrow, we're going to be talking about a bit of history. Actually, it's quite phenomenal history. It's about the Quakers. And we've all heard of the Quakers, but we may not know the impact of this relatively small group of people upon the history of the United States and the effect that they're having even today. Now, the woman that did the research on the Quakers, her name is Susan Sachs Goldman, and she has done an absolutely awesome job, and we're going to be talking about that tomorrow, Friday. We are going to be speaking with Steve Ross. His book is titled And Nothing Happened, But You Can Make It Happen. medical discoveries, practical, down-to-earth applications of how to use energy to heal. This isn't woo-woo. This is practical science. At the turn of the 20th century, so much of this was discovered. It disappeared. Why? How can we bring it back? How can we take it, utilize it in today's world? Well, Steve has some comments on that. This is also a little bit about history, but it's about a living history that can be applied today. So we've got that coming up, and oh, so much more. One of the joys, and you hear me say this over and over again, and I do it for a reason. One of the joys of my doing this show is to be able to bring perspective to all of us so that we realize that there's more than one way to do something. And I think diversity is so important. You look at nature. All you have to do is look at Mother Nature, and she shows you the value of diversity. If you have just one single plant in an area of soil, you don't allow anything else in there. Eventually, the earth becomes devoid of nutrients. Why? Because you need variance. You need this interrelationship that allows things to become harmonious, healthy, and to produce a balance. And that's the way it is in life in general. Mother Nature is a great teacher that way. So anyway, that's one of the things that I love about doing this show, and I hope you enjoy it as much as I do. So I wanted to, again, I wanted to share some different things with you today. And this is about some very practical experiences and dealings in medicine. Medicine as we know it today has made tremendous progress. There are so many levels that we have gone forth in. We have evolved in understanding how to work with the body, how to deal with certain things, but there has been a disconnect in many areas of what we call Western medicine relative to the body-mind-soul connection, and I really believe in that very, very strongly. Today we are finding that there's more communication about bringing an awareness into the area of creating harmony and health for us as human beings. We have to deal with all facets, not just one or the other. There are times when you have emergency medicine where you have to just be really technically sophisticated to know what to do in an emergency situation. And thank God we've got that, because it wasn't all that long ago we didn't. So we have some wonderful, wonderful things that we've learned about, we've come to understand, we have been able to evolve into. Can we do better? No question, absolutely. But I wanted to share with you a story about a woman by the name of Carrie, 46 years of age. And this woman, she was trying to get up. She was a mom. She was getting her kids off to school. She tried to get up. She couldn't. She was very, very dizzy. And then her left ear started feeling very strange. What did her husband do? Did what any of us would do. ER. We don't know what's going on. Going to go into the emergency room. Now, the doctor, because of the fact she was dizzy, because of all of these things that were going on, they did a CAT scan, but they couldn't find anything. And she went to her regular doctor, her GP. And the doctor, after listening to what she had to say, she said, I want you to get up. I want you to walk in a straight line. And Carrie couldn't do it. She couldn't walk in a straight line. So the GP was very concerned about this. So she sent her to an ear, nose, and throat specialist. And he discovered she had lost the hearing in both of her ears. Now, he wasn't sure why. So he put her through another CAT scan. Came back normal. Did a balance test. That balance test, she passed fine. 3 months later, because previously they couldn't figure out what it was, she could hear her heart beating in her left ear. And she could hear her heartbeat. Then after that, It hadn't happened before. 24/7. It was going boom, 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 so loud. She couldn't hear the TV. She'd hear her voice echo like she was in a barrel. If she ate anything hard like chips, the sound felt like it was a gun going off in her ear. That's how she described it. She was a wreck. And she kept going between doctors. The ER doctor said allergies, nerves. They were giving her medications for anxiety and a histamine. Someone else said get hearing aids. And she said she just didn't know what to do. Finally, she was recommended to an ear specialist at UCLA. Now, this is what the doctor said. When he was examining her and listening to everything, because she was a wreck, she just couldn't even handle anything in life. She was just a mess. And he said when she was telling him that she was dizzy and she could hear this heartbeat and the inner noise inside her body was so strong, he said, from his studies and his research, he thought she had a very rare condition. It was called superior semicircular canal dehiscence. Now, this is what it was. It was a pore. Now, take a look at your skin. It's almost impossible to see a pore. The pore, the size of a pinhead, forms in the inner ear. And this was only discovered in the 1990s. There have been other people that went through stuff like this. It's in a minority, but it's all in the medical history. They finally find this pore, the size of a pinhead that forms in the inner ear. Now, they have a different level of equipment at UCLA, and they did another CAT scan and said, there is the hole in your ear. This is what is causing it. Now, that is so tiny. To the eye, you wouldn't even be able to see it. They scheduled surgery. They had to make an incision above the ear, cutting a window in the skull and pushing the base of the brain out of the way to expose the inner ear. And he had a particular kind of substance, like a putty. It was tacky in feeling. Put it into that hole, plugged it. She was perfectly fine after that. The doctor said it was considered a cure. But keep in mind, again, this was something they were not able to discover until the 1990s. She said everything went back to normal. Sometimes there are things so tiny that can create such a big effect. And I wanted to share that with you because I think it's important that we understand that Western medicine combined, and its technology, combined with the other cultural levels of wisdom from around the world, can make a huge difference. This is a physiological condition that had to be fixed. Now, is there going to be a better way to fix it in the future? Who knows? The reality was the hole, the pore, had to be plugged. Once that was plugged, everything was right where it was supposed to be. Fascinating phenomenon, fascinating story. And the human body, to me, is incredible. I don't know if you've ever considered that, but you and your physical vehicle are living in a magnificent, I call it a living machine, if you will, that is just incredible. So you can get some real weird stuff, and that was the case with Carrie. This is Donna Sebo. When we come back, I'll share that sweet potato recipe that we missed earlier because of the electrical interference with Meadows' phone. And, oh, hey, a little bit of this and a little bit of that, and I'm so delighted you're with me. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
As a counselor, Donna Sebo is available for private consultations by appointment. These can be done by telephone or in person. If you'd like to schedule an appointment with Donna, call 253-582-5604 or 800-872-8852. That's 253-582-5604.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome back. Okay, I promised you that recipe, and I'll be getting to that in just a moment. But I wanted to share something a little bit wacky with you, and it has to do with baby naming laws. Now, I had never heard of this. Can you imagine a law regarding the naming of babies? That is just something beyond me. But believe it or not, there are cultures that do exactly that. And these are some of the countries. In Germany, parents are banned by law from using last names and the names of objects and products as first names. A child's first name must clearly indicate his or her gender, and all names must be approved by the Office of Vital Statistics in the area in which the child was born. This is not a joke. I'm telling you, this is real. Iceland, there is a naming committee. That's right, a naming committee in Iceland. It consults the National Registrar of Persons to determine if a name is acceptable. If parents don't want to go with any of the names on that list, they must apply for approval and pay a tax. They call it a fee. To me, it's a tax. And the name must contain only letters in the Icelandic alphabet. I know, it sounds strange, but it's true. New Zealand, the country's Births, Deaths, and Marriage Registration Act of 1995 absolutely prohibits parents in New Zealand from choosing a name that might cause offense to a reasonable person if it's unreasonably long or includes or resembles an official title or rank. Can you imagine someone wanting to name their kid Adolf Hitler? Well, there are people that have submitted that. And someone else wanted to name their kid Yay Detroit. Guess what happened? Yes, you're right. It was rejected. And in Denmark, there's a list of 7,000 pre-approved baby names. If they want something different, they have to get permission from their local church or government officials. And 15 to 20% of the 1,100 reviewed names, including creative spellings of common names, last names as first names, and unusual names, are rejected each year. Ah, yes. We human beings are very interesting. We not only are going to try to figure out ways to create taxes so that the government gets more money, but also we want to make sure that you conform in one way or another. Ah, yes. Velvet spice sweet potatoes. Now, this was a recipe that was given out by Meadow, and this is so easy. Now, this serves 6 people. Remember, you could take and cut this in half if you wanted smaller to serve it for 3. But it's 3 pounds of red-skinned sweet potatoes, and you peel them and chop them into 1-inch chunks. You need 1/3 cup of coconut cream. Now, you want to use a 15-ounce can of coconut milk. Do not use the light coconut milk because it's the fat from the coconut milk, and it's so healthy for you. It really is. You'll need a teaspoon of ginger juice from a 2-inch-long piece of peeled ginger. You want to grate it, and you press it through a garlic press. And believe me, if you have fresh ginger, there's a lot of juice in that ginger. And you need 1/4 teaspoon of Chinese 5-spice powder. And if you want a little salt and pepper to add to it, that's fine, but taste it first before you add it. Now, your coconut cream, you chill a can of coconut milk in the refrigerator for a few hours. Leaving it overnight actually is better. And you don't shake the can before you chill it. You just take the can from wherever you get it, put it in the fridge, and let the fat solids rise to the top. And the coconut milk you can use for something else. But you do not use the coconut cream found in grocery stores because it has additional sweeteners and thickeners, and it won't work well in this recipe. You go ahead and cook your sweet potatoes. You add and that takes about 10, 15 minutes. And in the pots that they've been cooked in, once they've been drained, you add your coconut cream, use a potato masher to mash them, and you can use a microplane to grate your ginger if you want. and then press the pulp through a garlic press to make the ginger juice. And remember, you only need a teaspoon. That stuff is pretty potent. And then your Chinese five spice powder, a little bit of salt. There you've got it. And if you wanted, you could even, for a different taste texture, you might want to add a little bit of coconut to it, or maybe you would want, for a variation, some plump golden raisins. There's just so many things you could do with this dish. It's very simple, very healthy, but also very, very flavorful. And I think practicing with foods and trying different things with it is just wonderful, absolutely terrific. Donna Siebel here. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. 888-627-6008. I wanted to share a special story with you about a woman named Kathy. And her story is about how she dealt with someone that she loved a great deal and their passing. All of us will experience this. And sometimes it causes us a great deal of pain. Our grief, dependent on circumstances and the bond that we have with the person that we love that passes on, can create a real unsettled environment. Well, Kathy is a woman who, when she passed away, she had been loved by so many people. And her friend Sheila was overwhelmed with grief. She felt that she had lost a part of herself. And they were in Mississippi. She said, my friend Kathy had this knack of talking to animals. She was raised on a farm. She just absolutely had this rapport that Sheila would watch her friend Kathy exhibit with animals. Didn't make any difference if it was a turkey, a pig, a horse, a bird. Kathy just had this magical persona. She just delighted in all of the life that was around her. And she was very childlike. Now, the reason Kathy was so childlike is that she was mentally retarded. And Sheila said she had the mentality of about an 8-year-old. But she said this woman was just, even though she was like a child in the way she acted and how she had this exuberance about life, she was to Sheila like a spiritual teacher. Because whenever she would become oppressed or feeling like life was very difficult, when she was around Kathy, there was this lightness that always filled Sheila's life. And Kathy had the habit with Sheila, whenever she saw her, she would always put her head, she'd give her a big hug, put her head against a spot on the left side of Sheila's chest, right over her heart. And when that happened, Sheila said, everything went away. It was as if Kathy just transmuted an energy into her. Well, Sheila gave part of the eulogy at Kathy's funeral, and she said, I just couldn't stop crying. The tears just flowed and flowed and flowed, and they just kept flowing for days. Now, Kathy had passed away from pancreatic cancer, and she said it was her good fortune, Sheila's good fortune, to be able to spend the last days with Kathy. But she said when she passed away, it was wintertime. And she said, I just went into a state of prayer saying, I need to know that Kathy's okay. I need to know that my beloved friend, who filled so much of my life with so much beauty and grace, that she's okay. Well, this is what happened to Sheila. It was a very, very bitter, cold morning in January. She was about to do some errands, and she said she sees this tiny little bird sitting on the floor of their front porch. It was a sparrow. She couldn't figure out how the sparrow got in because the door had been closed. Everything was tightly sealed, but there was this little sparrow inside. She put her hand down because she wanted to put the sparrow someplace safe outside. The little bird, now this is a wild bird, hopped into her hand, and she said it didn't tremble, it wasn't hurt, and it wasn't sick. So she went outside with this little sparrow, holding it in her hand. And she said, okay, you're outside, but it stayed put. Now, someone was going to go into town with her, and they called out and said, what have you got there? And they said, a bird. I just found it on the porch. She said, but that's odd. As it turned out, it was Sheila's mom. She said, put your hand out flat. The little bird went from her hand into her mother's hand. And the next thing that they knew, the bird flew into the truck. And she picked it up and wanted to put it in the air. And the bird fluttered, went above Sheila's head, and it came down and rested on the left side of her chest next to her heart. She said, that's exactly where Kathy put her head. It stayed there for a moment, but she felt the very same feeling she always felt when Kathy did that with her. Then the little bird flew away. It was Kathy's sign. She was okay. This is Donna Sebo. Won't you join me tomorrow? We are going to have a delightful time. I'm so glad you've been able to share this time with me. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. Let the mystic within you fulfill your heart. Put joy and love in your hands so that whatever you prepare, whether it's for yourself or for those that you love, they will get the gift as well. Have a magnificent day. I'll talk with you tomorrow. Same time, same place. Right here on The Donna Sebo Show. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.